Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time, right?
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of the world's best-selling sales book, The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we're here today on Sell or Die to make sure that you get the information that you need in order to make more sales, more money, keep your job, fire your boss, and take over the company.
That's right. This show is all about you and how we can help you. And all you need to do is find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Tell both your friends.
And then give us a 5-star review.
Okay. And today's show is all about how you can improve your life. I want to make sure that you get that. Because when we start to talk about what happens in the sales world, we mean it.
Oh, yeah. So let's get into it.
It's time to sell or die.
True story. Jeffrey's heard this. Well, my parents got married, the most persistent people in Wisconsin. They said they wanted to have a baby girl and name her Mary. And so my parents, being the persistent people they are, popped out 9 straight boys. And the 10th was finally a girl, and they quit. I'm the 9th boy. I'm the runt of the Irish Catholic litter. As Jeffrey Gittimer says, if there was any reason for someone to spend $50,000 in therapy, it would be the 9th boy in the family.
That's true. $50,000, by the way, is a cheap therapist.
Yeah.
You need to go to New York. It's $50,000 a month.
But the story I usually tell to give people a background of how I grew up, in our house, we had 3 small bedrooms, 1 large dormitory-sized bathroom that had 3 sinks, 2 toilets, 2 showers, and 9 rambunctious boys. Some of my earliest childhood memories, Jennifer, I used to wake up with 2, 3, 4 brothers in bed with me.
Yeah.
I always say it was a typical Irish Catholic family. In fact, I don't think I slept alone till I got married.
Oh, my goodness.
That's funny. That's very funny. But let's go back for just a little bit. You were originally, as a writer, penned a book called Networking is a Contact Sport. What is it? Did you use your sports analogy there because you were a big sports fan, or how did that come about?
Actually, what I tried to do, Jeffrey, I'm not a writer, and I think there's a big difference between being a writer and an author. I think a writer goes to their sacred writing space and writes every day. I think an author is someone who tries to communicate ideas. And so what I really did is I wrote a book for my kids, and it was 14 one-page chapters of what I did, why I did it, and what I learned from it in 14 periods of my life. Because I've done, like you, Jeffrey, a lot of goofy things in my life. And I wanted my kids and grandkids to know some of the crazy things that their grandpa and father had done. So after I wrote these 14 chapters, I went out with some of my buddies, and they said, "What are you doing, Sweeney, now that you're an empty nester?" And I said facetiously, "Oh, I wrote a book." And they said, "Really? What's it about?" I said, "I really didn't write a book. But what I did do is I took some thoughts and reflections of life, and I put it into these 14 chapters, attached it to my will." And they said, "What's the theme of the book?" And I said, "Well, it's really about networking and connecting." And they said, "What's the secret?" And I said, "The real secret, the secret sauce of networking, business, and life, it's really a place where we go to give and serve and not get." I know it sounds real simple, but to me, it's sort of a paradigm shift of what business and networking is about. So my friends helped me, or they gave me the confidence to write this book. And then we marketed it really hard, and it ended up making the New York Times bestseller list. So as Jeffrey Gittimer has told the world, for a dumb Irish guy who can't write, that's pretty
good. Yeah, well, actually, people who call themselves dumb are usually pretty damn smart. Even though you were the runt of the litter and the last of the boys in your multi-unit family, I think that what you did is try harder as the 9th or 10th sibling to put yourself in a position of leadership and self-accountability, responsibility, and you just use moxie. I know you well. You have great moxie. And
people would call that terminal insecurity, Jeffrey.
That, it could be that, Joe, but you know, and I know that being a student is not as insecure as you might think. You're just an avid learner and looking to learn at every moment in time. That's why you hung out with Steiner. That's why you hung out with, you know, the people that you hang out with to get to the Harvey McKays of the world and to get to the Dave Winfields of the world. And you know them well, and they respect you.
Yeah. You know, Jeffrey, you just said something interesting about being a student. In this whole speaking and sales training, a lot of people see themselves as experts. I heard a speaker last month say, he said, I'm not an expert, but what I am is a student of this field or this discipline, which really helps you reframe this, because you know the world, Jeffrey, of speakers and trainers. Everyone thinks they're an expert and they're so much better than anyone else. Just the description of saying, I'm a student and I've studied this, but I'm not an expert. I'm still learning every day.
Right.
I love that analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a student dad, and I've only been doing it for 45 years. But I had to relearn everything. Smarter.
But it's different being a parent now.
Oh, hell yeah.
Electronics and some of the stuff that they can have than when you were a dad.
When the twins, who are now 45 years old, would come over to me and say, what's for dinner? My 8-year-old Gabrielle comes over and says, what level are you on? And that's a huge difference in terms of the electronic world that we live in. And there's no getting around it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
So, Joe, I want to go back to your book, Networking is a Contact Sport. In your book, you talk about some of these really amazing accomplishments that you've been able to achieve just through networking, like getting Bob Costas to come to Milwaukee in the middle of winter, becoming the wingman to the Archbishop of New York City. Tell us about how did you do that?
Yeah, and tell us if Bob Costas wears a toupee.
I don't think he wears a toupee.
Get out of town. He's had same haircut for 50 years and it doesn't go gray.
You've had the same haircut since I've known you.
I understand that, but my haircut's legit. I don't have...
I think, Jennifer, seriously, not just to stroke our host, Jeff Gittimer, but many of the things and the way that I've been able to connect with people, I have learned from Jeff. And I've said this earlier about find something personal, do something memorable. What Bob Costas, I asked to come to Milwaukee probably 5 or 6 times. He said no every time. And one of the things I did is when I was sort of dejected because Costas said no, I ended up watching an NBC game of the week, ironically from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a baseball game, watching the Brewers play. The announcer was Bob Costas. And as he was broadcasting, he talked about this delicacy called a bratwurst, only made in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Goes to commercial break, spends the next whole inning talking about the secret stadium sauce, only manufactured at the County Stadium in Milwaukee. So I got up on Monday. I did a WWJD, not what would Jesus do, what would Jeffrey do, Jeffrey Gittimer. And I sent a case of bratwurst from Wisconsin to Bob Costas. A couple days later, I sent him a large vat of secret stadium sauce and called him back again. And I kept peppering him with fun stuff. Finally, he says, jokingly, he says, enough. And he said when he came here, Sweeney finally called and threatened to give Bob Uecker my home phone number. So I said, okay, I'm coming.
That's funny.
But I think the whole idea of Costas is really realizing, you know, what would turn him on. He doesn't care about my needs or a lot of other people's needs. And I think the key of networking is to really hone in and help people solve with their problems. Another Jeffrey Gittimer line: you don't sell anything. You just help people get what they want. And if you can do that, you'll sell everything that you need to sell in your inventory.
I thanks for the accolades. But I think that when you can get a person like Bob Costas to, number one, agree to come for whatever reason, and number two, when they get there, to really feel as though it was valuable enough for them to have made the trip, that's the whole deal. Getting someone, you know, making the sale is one thing. Keeping the customer, that's another thing.
Costa said that night, Jeff, that was the best event he had ever done. Now, maybe he was blowing smoke up my butt or whatever.
And I will tell you that when I went to the Bradley Center with Joe to see the Bucks lose to somebody, they were obviously
Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah. Every single person that we met, whether they were holding a door for you, you know, they had one of those usher uniforms on. Everybody loved Joe Sweeney because he treats everybody well and with respect, regardless of what position they're in. And that's what makes networking work. No matter who you are, like you, if you watch me, you see I talk to everybody. I engage every single person that I meet for one thing or another, whether it's the barista at Starbucks or the person behind me in line at Starbucks. I think that there's something to the networking process that demands that if you're trying to meet somebody big, you better meet all people small.
And in addition to that, Jeffrey,
that's tweetable.
The people that you're meeting with will judge you many times on how you treat the parking lot attendant,
that's
the usher,
right.
The waitress. And I think I agree with you. You treat everyone as if you want to be treated.
And you make friends with them. In New York, the expression is, you know, you don't talk to anybody. You don't make eye contact. But Jennifer can tell you that I've probably embarrassed her 500 times by talking to people. In the subway, in the elevator, standing on line someplace to go to the theater, the people next to you, wherever it is, if you talk to them just a little bit, you'd be amazed, like, wow, someone's talking to me. I better talk back.
Or ask them, how is their day going? And I think the best question that you can ever ask anyone is, after you break the ice, Jennifer, what are you most excited about in your life? Because what are the three questions we already ask people? And Jeffrey, let's you and I role play on this. Jeff, how you doing?
Excellent. And yourself, Joseph?
Okay, you're excellent. Jeff, you busy? Oh, God, so busy.
I'm totally busy.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, what's new? Not too much. I don't know a damn thing about you, Gittimer.
Right.
But if I could hear you say, if I could ask the question, Jeffrey, what are you most excited about? You know what? My daughter just turned, how old is Gabriel?
Eight.
And you know, for her eighth birthday, I asked that, you light up and I see the real Jeffrey. That's a much better question than the preview.
So Joe, what are you most excited about?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What am I excited about right now? Actually, I just wrote a third book after further review and just started it. I'm on the launch. I'm launching it. And it's sort of everything I've had bubble up inside me for about the last 15 or 20 years. And I finally had the courage to write it because it was something I didn't feel I was really worthy of writing or capable of writing, but I finally wrote it.
So what can I learn from your book?
From after further review?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, first of all, here's a cover of it. Jeffrey Gittimer thinks it was green after the Philadelphia Eagles.
Of course it was.
Jennifer, the book is what I think 12 or 13 of life's most meaningful lessons, and you could even say spiritual lessons. And since I'm not a priest or a rabbi or someone of visible faith life, I didn't feel I was really qualified to write it. I'm just kind of a sports business guy with a potty mouth. And so what I tried to do is use a form that people kind of know me, because I used to be a sports agent. So I used the game of football.
Wait. Who were you an agent for?
I had about two dozen pro athletes and coaches. Probably the most notable guy I worked with was a quarterback from Green Bay by the name of Brett Favre.
For how many years?
Several years. I was with him during his three MVP years. He went to two Super Bowls. So it was a very exciting time here in Wisconsin and for the Packers. But I
just wanted to make sure the audience knew your ultimate depth of credibility.
But the book starts out at an NFL football game. And when a coach doesn't like a call, he throws the red challenge flag. So the stadium gets quiet, which is really an important lesson in the book. And the officials look at the play from every different angle. And when they finally get the call right, the official comes to the 50-yard line, turns on his mic, and Jeffrey, I'm going to ask you the question.
Yep.
The ref says three words. What
After
are
further review.
Bingo.
The ruling on the field stands. Touchdown, Eagles. Oh.
That's more than three words.
No, but after further review is the whole deal.
I got it.
So if an NFL official could do that with a play of the football game to get the call right, what if Jeffrey Gittimer could do that with his life? And Jeffrey, you and I have spoken in front of hundreds of thousands of people over the last few decades. And I believe the number one challenge that people have, because I love going early and staying late and just figuring out what makes people tick, the number one challenge we all have in our life is that we don't go into the locker room like a football team does at halftime and look at what worked the first and second quarters of our life and what are we going to do between now and the time we leave this earth. And I think many of us wake up one day, we're 88 years old, we're on our deathbed, and we say, what the heck have we done with our life? So the purpose of the book is to force the reader to go into that locker room in our lives, whether we're 30, 50, 70, and really hit the pause button. And the key of going in the locker room, the most valuable lesson, is to realize we're going to die. Our life as we know it will end. And so that should really force us to take massive action and figure out what we want to do between today and the time we leave this earth. And so the book is called After Further Review, How Reflection, and not just reflecting, but reflection and taking action can turn your some days into today.
So have you had any of those moments where you've sort of stepped aside into your own locker room and reflected on your life?
Well, that's part of the reason I think I can write the book. Some of my friends have said, Sweeney, you've been in the locker room for 10 years. But yeah, I think, and I talk about it in the book, I think over the last probably 5 years, I've probably done 8 or 9 retreats, a couple silent retreats. Gittimer always teases me. He said, I don't believe that, Sweeney. You can't keep your mouth shut for 4 minutes.
How long did you have to be silent for?
Yeah. How long do you have to be silent for?
Like a whole weekend?
This is 3.5 days.
Whoa.
And you're not totally silent. There's people that come in and speak, and you do a lot of self-reflection, but you're quiet basically for 3.5 days. And you listen to speakers and you go back and reflect on what was said. So I've done an awful lot of reflection. And the last chapter of this book really talks about death and dying and because we're all going to go there. It's the white elephant in the room at every cocktail party, at every meeting, at every conversation of any depth, is we all know we're going to die. We all live like we're going to live forever. But what can we do today and tomorrow so we have no regrets on our deathbed? And that's basically what the book is about. But I weave all these football analogies throughout the book. There's 100 million people that follow football. And I think a lot of those people are heavy on sports, but kind of light on thinking about their own lives and spirituality. So the kind of the marketing ploy is to take those people and bring them into a new realm without it being threatening, because everyone loves football. Well, not everyone, most people do. But people won't listen to someone to say, sit down and reflect on your life. But if you can make it a fun vehicle like football, and that's what we've tried to do here with this book, After Further Review. It's a fun book.
That metaphor is amazing. The key is 60,000 people shut the hell up. And they're all watching on their Jumbotron or whatever they have at this, you know, depending on the technological update of that stadium. They're all watching what happened, what actually did happen. And people will buzz. And then in Philly, if it doesn't go your way, they all boo. You have 70,000 people booing. Yeah. So it's first of all, it's an accurate reflection of what happened. They have it from 20 angles.
Right.
And it'll show you whether that guy's knee hit the ground 1 inch before the goal line or the ball went over the goal line. You know, it's hard to make that judgment when you're only human. But the video shows you everything.
Yeah.
But you know what, Jeffrey, you said something about it getting quiet. My second book is called Moving the Needle, Get Clear, Get Free, and Get Going in Your Career, Business, and Life. And I say the best way to get clear, actually, I think the only way to get really clear, is you got to figure out how to get quiet. Mm-hmm. And how do you get quiet in life? I think the biggest enemy we have is this thing.
Mm-hmm. Your phone.
I don't know why you say that. Mine's just attached at my butt.
So I just think if you really want to get clear, you got to figure out how do we get quiet. And for some reason, a badge of honor for many of us is, Jeff, how are you doing? Oh, I'm so busy, Joe. What are you really saying? Look how important I am because I'm so busy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can figure out how to slow down and go in the locker room and reflect, I think we'll get clarity for really the second half of our lives.
Do you think that it is easier to reflect when you've lost a game or when you've won a game?
Oh, I think when you lose a game, I think you analyze it much differently. Yeah. I think when we celebrate and have success, when we have success, we celebrate. When we fail, whether it's a business or a game, I think it forces us to go into deep reflection.
Yeah, you see a lot of guys with their head in their hands in the locker room after a loss, but you don't see very many of them after a win. They're all, you know, rejoicing and not looking at what went wrong with that game, but rather what went right. And a lot of times a coach will come out and say, you know, we won a sloppy game, but the players don't care. It's a win.
But where do you think you can learn more, from a win or a loss?
It's a loss, and then it forces us to reflect, which makes me think that's why Jeffrey Gittimer and I reflect all the time. Maybe we got
a bunch of losers. Well, I can tell you, as a Philadelphia sports fan, I've had my share of reflection.
And in two out of the three books, I have a chapter on called Who's Your Wingman or Wingwoman? So I think part of what can help us in sales or help us move the needle in anything we do is to develop our own personal board of directors, which I call wingmen or wingwomen. And the whole purpose of having your own personal board is to be that video, Jeff, that you just said we don't have. Because most of us think we're a certain way. And when we have good advisors and close wingmen or wingwomen, they'll tell us, hey, you're terrible, Jeff.
I'm good at telling you, Jeffrey.
I happen to have a wing platoon, and it advises me or tries to straighten me up pretty much on a daily basis.
No, every other day. Come on.
I want to ask you a question. Did you get wingman from your experience with military?
I've always been kind of a military nut. Actually, I've always, instead of having my inner board, I've always called them my wingmen. I've always have. And it's just because my love of military and what they've done.
But you've spoken to the military, haven't you? Can you talk about that for just a little
bit? Yeah, actually, Jeff, about 5 years ago, I used the concepts of networking as a contact sport. And there was a large base here in the Midwest, Fort Sheridan in Chicago, and they had 800 returning troops from Afghanistan and Iraq. And the major there I met, he said, we're really having a hard time with our military going from the military life to civilian life. So I put together a talk called Tradition in Transition. And all the military have code words. So I call this Operation Crossover. How do you cross over from the military life to civilian life? And how do you reconnect? So I thought I'd do an hour and a half talk. I ended up spending 8 hours with the guys, you know, and the men and women. And it worked. So fast forward, there were some people there that met some people in San Diego, and the Navy SEALs had a similar challenge. How do you transition from being a Navy SEAL or a Special Forces military person to civilian life? So there was a group in California, which is now California and Virginia Beach, called the Honor Foundation, and they bring in speakers and experts and trainers to help with the military. So I did. I was the first professor or the first faculty member about 4 years ago to do it. Jeffrey, I think I've spent 24 or 26 nights. I do a couple nights over the last 4 years, and I got to tell you, it's been the most transformational thing I think I've done. To work with these highly skilled military, and these are special forces, primarily Navy SEALs, and have worked with them how to transition from military to civilian life. And I basically incorporate the three concepts of my book, but it's a three-step process to teach, coach, and connect. So I try to teach the military the concepts that I've put together in my book. I coach them individually. And then I try to help them to connect to a career that gives them meaning and purpose. And one of the things, Jeff, I think, and Jennifer, that why it resonates is I start the whole talk with my sports background. There are five basic challenges that pro athletes have transitioning from the sports world to civilian life. They're identical to the five challenges that Navy SEALs have between the military life and transitioning to civilian life. So I help them work through the five challenges.
That's totally cool. And I guarantee you that the feeling, you know, the audience feels great about it, but you feel way, way better.
Oh, God, I get so much more out of it. And quite honestly, I pay my own way. I don't charge for it. So some of the older military, some of the SEALs have said, Joe, what can we do for you? And I said, listen, I don't want anything. I don't need anything. But I'm absolutely infatuated with your training. And so for the last 4 years, I think I've been able to do five training missions with them. Not sure how legal it is, but you know, I've done the some of the boat captures, a maritime interdiction operation. I've been able to go to, I've jumped out of an airplane with them. So I've been able to do some really cool stuff. And it's kind of transformed my life, and it's completely, it reinforced how much respect I have for those people and what they do. And the most envious thing I think I have is all of them have found a purpose in life that they're worth dying for. And I don't know about the two of you, but I haven't found that purpose yet. And just hanging out with those people and working with them has really inspired me to try to become a better person.
That's incredible.
That's totally cool.
So I want to go back for a second to the locker room. I'm still in that locker room.
Are the men in their towels or what's the deal there?
We won't go there.
Okay.
But when you did these exercises, Joe, was there anything you were surprised to figure out or just you did so many of these, you said reflections and, you know, found insight into yourself. What was the most shocking thing?
I think the most shocking thing, Jennifer, maybe was how much work it took to reframe and get clear about who we are and why we're on this earth. Like, I'll give you one chapter of this book. I have a chapter called Metrics, and I start out by talking about football, the quarterback rating. I don't know if any of you two know what goes into a quarterback.
Of course we do.
But it's a formula about this long.
Yeah.
But it's complex. So football measures everything. And if you look at the game of baseball, the book Moneyball, they measure everything in baseball. And if we do that in sports, we do that on steroids in business, return on assets, return on investments, whatever it is. But here's the toughest thing when you go into the locker room is the idea of metrics in your life. And so I start out with a question. If your life turned out really good, A, how would you know it? And B, what metrics would you use? That is a hard question. And I actually did a retreat just focusing on that. And what happens in the process is you really learn to work through and articulate. And the retreat I went on forced us to write down your metrics for life. And most of us don't think about it.
That's true. We don't take the time to think about it.
But here is, maybe I have it behind me here. I can show you. And so one of the things that I figured out from this retreat is what my life's mission was. And I won't go through all the details, but the way I would measure my life is how many people were better people because I lived. And so part of my life's mission, and Jeffrey and I have talked about this, is my life's mission is to inspire, not motivate, but to inspire 100 million people and to get people to do things they never thought they could do. And people say, why is that important? Because it determines when you get up in the morning, who you hang with, what you do, where you spend time, who you say yes to, who you say no to. Let me see if I have it here. And one of the things that I did, I don't know if you could see it. Yeah, you can see it here.
Yeah.
I have this thing called
Well, we can see it. Our listeners can see it, but there's a big binder. That's what he's showing us.
Binders, yeah. But there's
like a 4-inch binder.
And I've got 10 of them. So if I do something for somebody and they send me a note, I'll print it out and I put it in there. And that's how I kind of measure my life. It's not about money anymore. It's really whose lives have you touched and whose lives have you made better?
It's funny. I don't know how many people save stuff like you and I do. When my father passed away in 1998, I wrote a column, and I said goodbye to my dad today. Not like I'll see you later, but he was on his deathbed. And I wrote about the reflections and some of the things that had happened to me or he had done to me. And I got hundreds of responses to that, many of whom said, you know, my mother, my father, my brother, somebody just passed away also, and I want to thank you for whatever the, you know, it really meant a lot to me. I saved every one of them. I had no choice.
Yeah.
You can't. And I mean,
I'm glad you saved them because I got to see them.
People who didn't know me were sending cards and letters, and I'm sure you get the same thing. I'm sure you get letters from people who had just returned from 4 years of holding a gun with their finger in the trigger every single day, and now having to return to their spouse and or their children, and having to be a completely different person.
It's funny, Jeffrey. I got a notification today from a Navy SEAL that I worked with, who was on, ironically, Brandon Steiner's, he commented on one of the podcasts I did, and he basically said, and this is one of the SEALs that helped train me do an obstacle course out there. He showed me how to do it. There's a reason, Jeffrey, they don't let people in their 50s become Navy SEALs, because I tore everything in my shoulder. But he said, I helped Joe Sweeney wow himself on the obstacle course. In return, Joe wowed me for showing me how to move the needle in life and business. He said, the only easy day was yesterday, gentlemen. Now go get them. That made my day. I mean, I'm going to print that out and put it in my book of days. But Jeffrey, you and I have the same missions, very similar, and it's why we do what we do. And I think the form we've taken is writing books, speaking, doing podcasts, so we can really help people move the needle in both their personal and professional lives.
There is no doubt that having done what I've done, Joe, or doing what you do, makes a difference to other people the same way it impacts you. But when I do a random act of kindness, I'm not holding the door for somebody because it makes them feel good. I'm holding the door for somebody because it makes me feel good.
So we're both kind of narcissists. Is that what you're saying?
kind of, yeah. The only difference is that some of us have better seats than others. So I only want to look at it from a standpoint of you have a great message, and that message goes on to impact anybody that decides they're going to read any one of your three books. I hardly recommend them. You can get them on Amazon, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you in case they're in the military and they need some help?
If you just go to joesweeney.com and you could just fill out a form, we'll get back to everybody. If I don't get back to you today or tomorrow, it's because I'm traveling, but we'll respond to anyone who contacts us. And if there's anything that we can do for any of your listeners, Jeffrey, be happy to send any materials that we have that can help your listeners in anything that they're experiencing in their life.
Thanks for joining us on Sell or Die. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die.
And follow us on Twitter. I'm at Gittimer. On Facebook, I'm / Jeffrey Gittimer.
I'm at Jen in the New York Minute.
You follow me, you follow Jen. We tweet it, we Facebook it, you click it, you join it.
Thanks to our amazing guests today. Our producer is Doug Branson, and our technical director is Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.